This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello, and welcome to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Marcy Davis. And with me, as always, is my amazing service dog and co-host, Fenway. And we're so glad to be with you today. And today, we're going to be telling a story that begins with an awesome one woman and her dog, and reaches all the way to the decks of United States Navy aircraft carriers. So if you wonder who that is, our guest today is Brooke Corson, who is also the founder of Mutts with a Mission, which is a Virginia nonprofit behind some of the most remarkable working dogs in the United States. These are dogs that serve wounded warriors and first responders, and even dogs that are deployed at sea to bring comfort to thousands of sailors far away from their home. So these are working dogs with a true mission, and just stay right here as we take just a quick break, and then we're gonna welcome Brooke Corson to the show.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. We're so excited to have Brooke Corson on our show today. Hello, Brooke, and welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, we are so excited and want to hear all the things that you have been up to. And I know that it all started with a dog named Angus. So tell us, take us back, Brooke. How did you get started in this work?
I was an activated reservist, and I was mobilized down to Fort Benning, and I wound up spending 2 years down there. And while I was down there, I got a Cairn Terrier and named him Angus. I got him originally to train for blood trailing wounded deer, and took him to work with me all the time. Definitely asked for forgiveness and not permission as a supply sergeant. And while I was down there, I started noticing. So what was happening? I was down there from 2004 to 2006. And what was happening was they were mobilizing reservists down to, you know, different, like I was down at Fort Benning, to different places. And then they were, you know, active duty, sending people active duty. And at the same time, they were bringing back active duty members who had been overseas and were sending them to drill sergeant school. And then they were having these guys become drill sergeants. I say guys, I mean guys and girls. And so what was happening at the time was, I was a drill sergeant later on. And it's a very stressful thing to do. Not only do you have to go back to drill sergeant school where you become basically become a private again, but then you also have to learn all the things that you have to teach the privates as a drill sergeant. And so, you know, you're pulling these guys right out of combat. They're coming back. They're having to, you know, go through drill sergeant school and then be a drill sergeant.
That's a lot.
Yeah. It's a lot. You get about 55 privates at the beginning of every cycle for your. And so it's a lot because now you're everything, your mom, your dad, your instructor, your, you know, your mission is now to teach these privates everything that they need to know, especially during this time. I mean, it's any time, but especially because, you know, they had in the Army, people were graduating from basic training, AIT, and they were going straight overseas. So that was becoming, you know, very problematic. So at that time, it's very, very stressful as a drill sergeant. And these guys were coming in. I was a supply sergeant at the time. So what these guys would do is I had Angus, and they would come in and they would hang out with him after being out on the ranges or things like that, you know, after a really stressful day. And I could see their stress level lower. So I did 2 years down at Fort Benning. I became a drill sergeant. I was a combative instructor while I was out there as well. And I was a drill sergeant at Fort Knox. So I got to, you know, live it firsthand. But I started losing friends to suicide. And so I was, you know, I was reservist. I wasn't on active duty anymore. And I would hear about friends that had committed suicide. And I would tell my husband, you know, there's got to be something I can do. There's got to be something I could do. Now, I grew up training dogs, helped pay my way through college training dogs and things like that. And, you know, started looking into service dogs and service dogs for PTSD and things like that. And at that time, there wasn't a whole lot back in, you know, 2007, 2008. And my husband finally said, you know, you either need to do something or stop talking about it. So here we are now, 18 years later.
And you started doing something about it. I love it.
I did.
Yeah. So. Yeah, you did. Yeah. Well, tell us, how did you do that and place your very first dog? What did that look like? And now you're an Assistance Dogs International accredited program. So how did you get from that to this?
So when I started the organization, I have no business background. I am an agriculture major. I'm an animal science major. So my background is in beef cattle and sheep. And so my master's degree is in agriculture education. So, you know, I have no business experience. So, you know, just started researching nonprofit things, how to get, you know, how to incorporate, you know, all the lessons that you need to know. I've learned things that I never thought I would learn, like how to set up a website, you know, federal taxes, all the good things that come with running a nonprofit. But I really, really, really wanted to do it the right way as I was researching, you know, starting everything. And so what I did was I looked into Assistance Dogs International. And at the time that we were starting, there was no owner trained program. And so owner trained is where, I'm not sure how familiar you are with it, but it's where the individual owns their dog. And they pass this for our organization. They pass the same criteria that our program trained dogs do, but they're allowed to come in and train, you know, their dog throughout the process. There's requirements and things like that. You know, programs are different. So as we were going through, I said, well, I want to build my program so that eventually we can become accredited through Assistance Dogs International. But I felt like the owner training model fit kind of where we were, not only by locale, but in, as far as need. And so we started out owner training. And, but then we were also doing, we didn't have puppy raisers at the time, but I was taking in a few dogs here and there and training them. So our first dog that we placed was a dog named, that we placed a veteran, was a dog named Stella. And she was placed with the Marine Corps veteran. She was actually donated to us. A family came to us. They said, well, we heard about your program, and we were very small at the time. They said, we heard about your program, and we think this dog's a wonderful dog, but we're going to take her to shelter. She's just too much for us. And she was a Border Collie Lab cross, definitely more lab than Border Collie, thankfully. And so I took her in and trained her and wound up. The story for the guy that got her was, he said he was reading through the newspaper one day. He was going to go to the movies, and this was back, you know, we're talking 2009. And he said, I was, you know, looking through the paper to see what movies were available, you know, in the theater. And he said, I kind of wanted to go, but I didn't want to go because there's so many people. And he was a Gulf War veteran. And so he said, and I came across this article that had been written about your organization. And he said, and I decided to reach out. And so he was placed with Stella. About a year later, he was funny because he was a Marine. He would call me up and he'd be like, hey, Sergeant Corson, never called me by my first name. He'd always say, hey, Sergeant Corson, how's Stella doing in training? I'm like, she's doing great, Robert. Like, we're still making forward progress. So it was just funny.
He was excited. Yeah.
He was very excited. Very, very nice gentleman. But it was amazing because, you know, you hear all the stories, you hear, you know, all these things. But I know Stella was for PTSD. And we were going out doing our training. He came and trained with me for about a week and a half. Because we know, even back then, we covered everything, the law, your responsibility. I have a service dog handler. It's, you know, it's not just do businesses have responsibilities to you, but you have responsibilities being out in public with the service dog.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which you live every day with your service dog.
Yes, I do. And it's like being with a celebrity out in public where people are wanting to take your service dog's picture and all kinds of things. That's how I feel, at least, Brooke, that I am with a celebrity with Fenway.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's part of the job too that we have is, when we place service dogs or if we're doing owner training, is that we let people know that they realize that, hey, this is going to bring more attention to you, whether you like it or not. And you know, are you in the space where you can handle that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
it's a big
some
factor.
People,
yeah.
It is. Because some people say, well, I want a service dog to keep people away from me. It's like, that's not really helping you in your forward journey.
No, it's going to be a little magnet. Yep.
Right. Yes.
I know. I say there's no run into the grocery store anymore. I can't just run in and get something because I'm going to see people and they're going to want to know about Fenway and touch him. And I want them to have a good experience so that they understand the role and the difference with these dogs. Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're an ambassador and that's what you know, now we're here down in Virginia Beach and after a couple moves and we now have puppy raisers and we do owner training again.
And that's really becoming more prevalent now. People are loving the owner training. You were at the cutting edge of it when you started back in 2008, 2009, but really a lot of people really are liking that, especially as challenging as it is now to get a service dog. I think it's more challenging now than it was when I started, which was over 30 years ago, Brooke. But really, it still is because people want them. But there aren't many programs like you even now in 2026.
Well, I think a lot of programs, and I'm only speaking in the ADI space because that's where we are. I know that a lot of programs during COVID really took a hit. As far as puppy raisers losing classes of dogs just because they couldn't get out and get exposed and socialization because of their state laws and things like that, as far as, you know, all the COVID regulations. We were fortunate here in Virginia. Our governor said, well, if you're producing durable medical equipment, you can, you know, continue business as normal. And we said, well, we are producing durable medical equipment. But there were times, you know, I had a class of 13 dogs come back in. And there were days, I remember, at the time I was homeschooling my two boys and we would load the van up with dogs and go to this parking garage in the middle of Norfolk and go work dogs out in the middle of Norfolk in town. And it was like a ghost. It was like something out of a movie.
Yeah,
it would be
bet.
Us. Honestly, it was us, the people that they had construction workers working on the streets, police officers, and then homeless people. And that
that's
was it.
It.
That
wow.
was it.
Wow. Wow.
And so, you know, but some programs really took a hit. And when you're losing entire classes of dogs, when you're, you know, in like a program as small as ours, or even a program as big as like Canine Companions, you know, to lose that many dogs, that really, it puts your breeding program back. It puts your, you know, your wait list. Well, you know, people were like, yeah, I understand, but I've already been on the wait list for, you know, 2 years. I should have been getting a dog this year. You know, it's really, it's very difficult. And I think too, a mindset has developed, unfortunately, and we've seen it, is people walk in and want a dog right away, but
they're
not thinking about, it takes 2 years to train these dogs.
Yeah. Oh, it's a big investment for everybody.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 Well, Brooke, we are going to stop just for a quick second and hear some important messages from our sponsors. And we're going to come back because we've got a lot more we want to hear about of what you are doing at Mutts with the Mission. So everybody just stay where you are and come right back.
Talk to the Paw.
Hi, this is Amy Stewart.
Hi, I'm Jane Lynch.
This is Mandy Bourne.
Hi there, I'm Kate Walsh.
This is Catherine Tygo.
There's only one station that gives you the scoop on wagging tongues and tails and who's walking who in Rent and Tinseltown. Pet Life Radio, the tail wagger. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. We are visiting today with Brooke Corson, the amazing director of Mutts with a Mission. And just, we're so excited to hear about how you got started, Brooke. And, you know, as we're talking about how you became a director of this amazing program, I know that you are so committed to no cost to the veterans, officers, and first responders that you serve. So tell us why that no cost promise is so important to you and what it takes to make that possible.
I never want to see someone who needs a service dog to not get one because of money. That shouldn't be a factor in my opinion. Now, I am not faulting any organization that charges. It's just, that's just near dear to me. If you asked me 10 years ago to come up with $10,000, $15,000, you know, to help pay for a dog, there's no way I could have done it. And so I really don't want costs to be a barrier for people to get a well-trained service dog, which then means as an organization, we manage all those costs on our own.
Wow. That's a lot. So do you do a lot of fundraising, grant writing, all the above, I'm guessing?
Fundraising. And we've just been blessed to have very, very generous donors. It's, you know, word of mouth, we have an organization that does, they send out mailers for us that we've partnered with several years ago, that does a wonderful job. It's kind of a combination of everything. Have some grants, have some just phenomenal sponsors, not only just individuals, but some great organizations that we've partnered with as well.
And that's it, is that collaboration piece is so critical, so critical. That's wonderful. Well, tell us about, what does the journey look like in your organization from a puppy being born all the way to being fully placed service dog? How long does it take? What qualities are you looking for? Tell us about that process.
So it takes about 2 years. I know you mentioned our expeditionary facility dogs earlier. It takes them about 2.5, roughly 3 years, because they get extra training. But as a puppy, no matter whether they're going for facility for service or for expeditionary facility dogs, we call them EFDs, they all start out as service dogs in training. And so they all go to puppy raisers. They get as many experiences as they can and meet as many people. Again, we're definitely fortunate to be in this area in Hampton Roads because we have partnered with the Navy, essentially, and ships will call us to come do visits to help, you know, alleviate stress on their boats. We'll take the puppies, we'll take the young dogs in training. And it's nice because not only does it get them exposed to very different environments, but then it also allows us, as the dogs grow up, to kind of figure out who's going to take what role in the next step of their life. So we have some dogs that we identify through making these visits and things like that. And we're like, oh, this is definitely a one person dog. So we say, okay, we're going to put you on the path as a service dog. And then, you know, we look, oh, this dog's very social. We're going to put you on the path to be a facility dog. And then from facility dog, we go, would you be a good facility dog for a police department or a fire department? Or would you be a good EFD? So can you handle the hustle and bustle of a ship life? And that would tell you, some people worry about, oh, do the dogs, you know, being on a ship, it's depressing, things like that. These dogs have 4,000 to 5,000 best friends. We have dogs that, so in between deployments, the dogs come back to us for I would say 2 to 4 weeks. So we do, you know, all that, we do pre-deployment health checks and x-rays of their joints. And then we do the same thing post-deployment, just because we want to make sure, in blood work, we want to make sure physically they're healthy. We bring them back in to evaluate their temperaments to make sure temperamentally they're still, you know, healthy and in a good place. And if anything, you know, do a little retraining, and then we may have to train up new team members for the ship, or we may have, you know, so we try to do that all in that time period. And in my opinion, when we bring these EFDs back for that time period, they're well loved. They see their puppy raisers. They know us, you know, very, very well. And I think they kind of get a little down. I won't say depressed, but they're like, man,
boring.
I'm back at the training center. And where are all my friends? Like, you know, right. And so it's funny because then when we take them back to the ship, they walk onto that pier and they're like, oh yeah,
woo-hoo!
I'm back.
Yeah.
Oh yes. Yeah. They're so excited, and their crew members are so excited to see them. It's really a win-win.
I bet. Well, I got to say, Brooke, I'm sitting here smiling and giggling a little bit because you mentioned expeditionary facility dog like that. That just rolled off your tongue like it was nothing, and that everybody would know what that was, which in fact, that is what I saw about Mutts with a Mission, which I got so excited about because that was the first time I'd ever seen that and heard about dogs being aboard United States Navy warships and such a close connection with the Navy like that. So I just have to back up a minute and say, wow, whoa, holy moly, that is amazing. And how did you get that started, Brooke? How did you get the Navy to agree to that? Because that's a pretty big deal.
It is. And there's actually a Navy instruction regarding expeditionary facility dogs now that we authored. So back in 2000, and I'm going to date myself, I think it was 22. It was before the Bush left for their first deployment. We were contacted through a very roundabout way that if I ever had to do it again, it would probably never work out. It was in a Facebook Messenger group that I was in with a couple other people in the area that I didn't know, and we never talked to each other. And someone reached out to another trainer reached out and asked if we could do this. But they had been contacted by the spouse of the CO of the Bush and said, hey, we'd like to have some dogs come visit our sailors. We're trying to build resiliency, you know, pre-deployment. And so they passed it off to me. We got in contact, so we started making shift visits. I think we were doing weekly visits to the Bush at that time. It was about 2 months before they deployed. And then other ships were like, well, we want the dogs to come visit. And so we were visiting carriers and destroyers and things like that. And so there was an LHD, which is a smaller ship, called the Wasp, and we were on the ship doing a visit with a bunch of our dogs, and the DRC, which is the Deployment Resiliency Counselor, it's a civilian mental health professional that works on the ships, came up and said, well, I want a dog. How do we get a dog on the ship? And I said, well, I have no idea. Like, that's a great question. I don't think you can. And I said, but let me go back and do some research. And the CO came over and was like, yeah, we'd be like, if we can get a dog, we want a dog. And I said, well, I said, let me go look. Let me go look up stuff. I said, I know that there's, you know, in the TB Med 4, there's a policy for dogs at, you know, hospitals and things like that, military hospitals. I said, but I've never heard of this. So did a bunch of research, nothing. And I went back to him. I said, well, sir, it's Captain Purcell. I said, there's no policy. There's nothing. And he goes, okay, so how do we build one? And I said, well, I guess we just start putting things on paper. So between the Wasp and Mutts with a Mission, we built the policy, and it was accepted by the Navy. Very, very specific criteria, really. And we actually just revised it late last year. It was signed into policy, a second version that gives more, you know, really had to look out for the dog's welfare, because not every dog, you know, not every dog can be a service dog.
Right.
Not every dog can be a facility dog, and not every dog is going to thrive on a ship.
Right.
And so you've really got to look at the quality of dog you're bringing in. You've got to look at, you know, their health, their temperament, the training they get. And, you know, you really need to know the whole backstory on the dog. Like, we're constantly checking our dogs, hips, elbows, shoulders, to make sure that the life, the up and down on, you know, the ship is not destroying their joints. And it's not. I can say we've had dogs on multiple deployments and their x-rays have come back. We get OFA to check them out. And so that's actually on, you go to OFA and look up the dogs, and you can look at their history of, you know, the x-rays that they've had done. So we're very specific about that. We're constantly looking at the health of the dog, the temper of the dog. Is the dog happy? Is this the right life for the dog? You know, we're getting feedback from the team constantly. How's the dog doing? We have a dog that was deployed on the Ford recently.
I want to ask you about next. Yeah. Is that Captain Sage that you're referring to?
It is. It's Sage. Yes.
Yeah,
yep. So she was there for the fire. And, you know, and so then it becomes like, well, she was taken safely to a place, you know, with the fire. We were in contact with her handler when he had time. We have teams of about 6 to 7 people that we train up. Everybody's personally trained by our staff.
And do they volunteer, Brooke? How do they?
It is. It's a collateral duty. So they don't get, you know, it has to fit within their work schedule. We also make sure that it can be sailors from a bunch of different departments, but they all have to have assist training, which is a mental health. Like, if someone's in crisis, it teaches them, how to be able to communicate with them and be able to get them to the next step of resource.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because these dogs are really, yeah, they make you smile, but they're really there, just like in our facility dogs for our police departments, is to make mental health more accessible. So if you're having a rough day and you stop and talk with we'll say Sage, you know, and you're sitting there petting her and maybe you're talking to her and the handler's talking to you and you make a comment of like, yeah, you know, I'm just really having a hard time or something like that, that handler can go, hey, why don't we go talk with the chaplain? Why don't we go talk with the DRC? Why don't we go talk with somebody? Or if you have someone like, I know Ike the dog who's on the WASP, his handler was talking, they were in a port overseas, stopped to talk with this one sailor just sitting off, you know, by himself, stopped. Ike climbed up in the sailor's lap, which Ike doesn't normally do. DRC was sitting there talking with him because she was one of his handlers. And I'm just talking with the sailor. And sailor came to her office the next day and said, you know, what you didn't know yesterday was I had a knife and I was getting ready to commit suicide.
Oh, my goodness.
And he said, I was sitting there thinking nobody cared about me. No one would miss me. You happened to stop by. And then Ike got in my lap and started, you know, licking me and interacting with me. And he said, and then I realized that someone would miss me. So they were able to get this sailor help. He's still in the Navy today. But more importantly, you know, just that short interaction made that sailor realize that what he was going to do wasn't the right thing to do, that people do care about him. And so, you know, just that quick interaction.
Well, there you go, Brooke. That fulfills everything that you've done and makes all this work so worthwhile.
Exactly.
That's it. Yeah, that is what it's all about. That is so beautiful and incredible, and what a connection. Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, it, like you said, it's much more than stronger morale. It really is about that choice that someone maybe thinking they have to make, and how these dogs are changing that choice and that decision and that resilience. It's so beautiful.
Yep.
And so tell us, Brooke, well, first of all, I still want to know about Captain Sage and about when they go on a full deployment. What does that look like, Brooke? How long are the dogs on the ship, average?
Well, they're on anywhere between 11-month deployment. I think she set the record. I think the whole ship set a record, but I know she was on there the entire deployment. We jokingly say, well, I don't joke. The handlers think I'm joking. They ask us when they're getting ready to deploy there, how much dog food should we take? And I said, take 12 bags, you know, roughly a bag a month, right?
Mm-hmm.
So make sure, we're not going to be gone. And I was talking to Sage's primary handler the other day, and he goes, how did you know? I said, because I was Army. I said, and they don't just, and in the Army, they don't extend your deployment 1 month at a time. They extend your deployment 6 months at a time.
Yeah, so, yeah. And you got to be prepared.
That's right. So
yes.
She does fine. I mean, she does well. They all do well. The handling team is very, you know, she stays in the same quarters every night. So that's one of our things, is that, you know, there is a primary handler. So she goes and stays in her case, it's the Chief Snitzer. She stays in his stateroom every single night.
Yes, that's her room. Yes.
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 Because it's very important for us for them to have a home base, because they work so hard during the day, and they'll shift through handlers during the day, that they need to be able to go, okay, I know that, it's bedtime. I know that I'm going to go stay in my dog bed in my room.
Right, right. That's so important.
Very.
Well, I know that, gosh, there's so many things I want to hear about. And I know that you're so busy and our time is almost ending. But I just want to ask you, what's it like for you, Brooke, to watch this program grow across the Navy?
It's humbling.
Yeah.
It's definitely, our organization has been blessed. And not only through our donors, but through our puppy raisers and through the opportunities that we've had and are still having. It's almost surreal sometimes to think that, because Captain Rudder on the Vincent was featured with NASCAR the other weekend.
Cool.
You know, NASCAR was out in San Diego and he was there for part of it. So, you know, to think of people all over the world saw, you know, Rudder with the Carl Vinson. So it's very, you know, if we can, I always said when I started the organization, is if I can keep one person from committing suicide than I've done what I set out to do. And so I like to think that, you know, we're able to affect people. I have a wonderful team. I have, you know, a wonderful support staff, wonderful puppy raisers. It's not a one man show. And, you know, I'm grateful for every opportunity I have, and every opportunity that we have, we're able to network out to more and more people. And sometimes, you know what, Mutts with a Mission isn't the organization for the individual, but they hear about us, they reach out to us, and we can go, hey, let's get you, you know, to another ADI accredited organization so that you can have a great dog and have a great experience because of everything that they're going to do for you.
Yeah. Oh, Brooke, you are definitely in the beauty of living a life well lived. Yes, you are doing it, Brooke. It's just so fantastic what you're doing and how you're impacting and saving lives. You and your team and your incredible canines are absolutely doing it. And it's amazing. Well, before you go, tell us, where can our listeners learn more about Mutts with a Mission? How can they follow your dog's journeys? And how can they support your incredible work?
So you can go to muttswithamission.org. That has, you know, if you'd like to donate, that's great. If you'd like to become a puppy raiser, that information's on there. If you're looking for, you know, a service dog or to owner trained, all that, or a facility dog, all that information's on there. We have a Facebook page as well, and Instagram. Mutts with a Mission is our Instagram, as well as our Facebook. And I think they're also linked on our site. And then you can follow our ship dogs, because all six of our ship dogs have Instagram pages, and Tara, who does all of our social media stuff, runs all of their pages. So they're all linked to everything. So
what a fun job that would be. Yes.
Oh, she's phenomenal at it too. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, Brooke, thank you so much for what you're doing. And thank you so much for being with us today. And please promise that you'll come back and keep sharing with us, because I can only imagine what other cutting edge things you're going to do in the service dog and facility dog industries. Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm happy to come back anytime you'll have me. I enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you. Well, you are welcome anytime. And we just love talking with you today. So thank you so, so much, Brooke.
Thank you.
And thank you, our listeners, for being with us. We love to hear from you, so please keep those emails coming. And you know you can reach me or Fenway at Marcy, M-A-R-C-I-E, at PetLifeRadio.com. And also, you always know that we will post all of the links and some of the information that Brooke shared with us today about the wonderful Mutts with a Mission program. So thanks so much for being with us, and take good care.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.